funny and kind of hard to watch at the same time. Good morning. My name is Eric. I am the Connections Director here at Cross Point.
And my name's Kurt. I'm the lead pastor here at Cross Point. And we're really excited you're here this morning. You know, if you're newer to Cross Point, or maybe this is your first time with us, just want to say welcome. We're in a series called Flickers of Hope, and we're taking a look at some of those places in the Christmas story where we actually find these glimpses of hope. And we're going to continue to explore this today. And so before we do that, you know, somebody said to me, in fact, I think it was PJ that said, wherever PJ went, you know, I think we've done Christmas vacation every week for the last 4 weeks, all right? 4 weeks in a row of something, because I love the movie, of course. And so, but you know, really at a higher level, we believe that, you know, one of the things you should experience here is it should be fun when you come to church, so we always insert something along those lines. But the other really big connect there was we wanted to welcome Eric back to our team here. Eric is back. I was off last weekend, because that scene is very resembling of something you experienced last week.
Yeah, not exactly, but very close to it. I want a little Griswold.
a little Griswold
in my house. Yeah, I was out decorating, and I have to say, I got the attention of my entire neighborhood. My entire neighborhood was pretty much outside my house because they were in awe of the light display. Unfortunately, the lights were of a fire truck and of an ambulance coming to my house. I kid you not, I fell off a ladder, hanging lights.
We can laugh about it now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I wasn't standing, I wasn't breathing for a while. It was very scary because the reality of it is you hear a lot of people who truly do hurt themselves that way. And so all that went through my mind at the time. But yeah, now looking back at it, it is kind of humorous, but it is also this this inconvenience. I mean, if you're sick this time of year, if you're hurt this time of year, it really kind of throws with your life. I missed some work as a result of that. You know, got behind on some Christmas shopping, wasn't able to do that too. My in-laws moved last weekend. I wasn't able to help them with that.
I felt awful
about that. So, yeah, it's been a bit of an interruption in my life, to say the least.
Well, and we're going to talk about interruptions in just a moment. You know, that's one of the many traditions we see. I mean, all the details we go through to make it feel like Christmas. Another one we do around here is something called Spread Some Cheer. And maybe when you came in, you saw the box truck, the trailers. We've got 84 boxes coming in with about 75 pounds of food in each box today that are immediately going out into homes in the greater Indianapolis area, even right here in Fishers, to families who won't have food on their Christmas table unless these arrive today. So way to go, Cross Point, on making that happen. Incredible, incredible thing. Over 1,000 people are going to be fed through that. We also have a lot of gifts coming in through the Giving Tree. Man, this is one of my favorite Sundays of the year because it's just love flowing. I mean, seeing all of this returning, the generosity that we see is an amazing thing. So way to go. A couple things before we continue with our service. When you came in this morning, you received a weekly that looks like this. Go ahead and take that out. Inside is a connection card. I'd like you to pull the connection card out, and next to you on a chair, maybe underneath you, is a pen. Take a moment, and if you're a partner or a regular attender, all we need on this card is your name and then any information that's changed so we can update our database with the most current information. If you're a guest with us today, again, we want to say welcome. And we realize there are 100 other places you could be. You could be shopping. You could be doing a lot of things right now. We consider it, you know, a privilege that you choose to join us for a little over an hour here at Cross Point. So take a moment and fill this card out as well with as much information as you're comfortable passing on to us. And then put this card someplace where you can pull it out later in our service this morning.
If you are a guest with us this morning, welcome, and we'd love to meet you at a connection point after the service today. Next weekend, Christmas Eve at Cross Point, we're really excited about this. Two services, 5:30 and 7 o'clock. As a matter of fact, if you're interested in serving in one of those services, helping out one of the areas, namely there is some help needed in the parking lot. If you want to help direct traffic, you can do that. Also, if you want to help direct kids, we have some help specifically in the second service, in like the nursery, or even at the coffee bar. If you're interested in serving at Christmas Eve here at Cross Point, please mark that on your connection card. And Christmas Eve is a wonderful time because this is one of those times of year, Christmas and Easter, where people are more receptive and open to going to church, maybe trying out a church. So if you've ever been intimidated about asking someone to church, this is kind of a good time of the year to do it because people are very open to doing it. So we encourage you to do that. On some of the chairs here, you'll see a little pack of mints that has some information about the Christmas Eve service on there. It could be just a neat way for you to invite someone to Christmas Eve, and they freshen their breath at the same time, so it's a bonus.
Yeah, well, we encourage you not to just hand that to them. It might communicate something, you know, hey, here's some mints for you. You know, put them on a pile of cookies,
exactly.
I mean, a plate of cookies, do something, you know, generous with it. Now, one other note about next weekend, this will be our Christmas weekend services, so there will be no services on Christmas morning. Christmas Eve will be our weekend services, and then the following weekend, we will have no service services as well. Another one of the traditions here at Crosspoint, we give the last weekend of the year off to all of our staff, all of our volunteers for the many hours every year that week in, week out, we have volunteers that set this place up, tear this place down. And so New Year's weekend, there will be no services as a way to kind of take a Sabbath, per se, and give all of our volunteers a rest. And so we invite you to join us back on January 8th. We'll have both of our services going, 9 and 10:30. And we'll begin in a new series called Everyday Breakthroughs. You know, it's the beginning of the year. We're looking to make resolutions. Maybe not resolutions, but you know, we want to make changes as we go into the new year. And so we'll be taking a four-week look at some of those everyday decisions that we make that allow us to move forward, whether it be in our relationships, with friends, in our marriage relationships, maybe financially. You know, we just want to take some steps forward. We're going to explore that as well as how to take steps forward in our careers. So Everyday Breakthroughs beginning January 8th.
Yeah, and finally, Kurt mentioned finances and also mentioned generous time of season, as we saw evidence this morning with some of the things going on outside and when you walked in this morning. If you are a generous person, if you are looking to give back at Christmas time, maybe consider giving a year-end gift to Crosspoint as well. Maybe it's something that's been on your heart to do. Maybe you want to get caught up or move forward on your crazy gift campaign. Because we only have one more service left this year, just a reminder that if you're looking for a final opportunity to give to Crosspoint, say a year-end gift, there's this envelope in your weekly today. It's got the stamp on there, and it's addressed to Crosspoint, so it's very easy for you. You can put your year-end gift in there, or you can fill out some information on there too, so you can give your gift online as well. It's a real convenient way to give, and as in a few months you'll be doing your taxes, you might be going, oh, I wish I would have given maybe a little bit more. We know that's not the reason you give to Crosspoint, but it might be the reason why you want to make your gift, say, now in the next couple of weeks as opposed to first week of January and February.
Exactly. So take that envelope with you. You can drop it in the mail. Thanks, Eric. Well, hey, it's great to have you here today. We're going to take a look at another picture of this story, of this flicker of hope that we find. Before we do that, let's pray. God, I'm just praying today that as we are in this last week before Christmas, I mean, it's an exciting time. It's a time when, as kids, man, we just couldn't wait for that day to come. And yet, God, as adults, you know, we maybe look at it a little differently, God, but I would just ask that you grow our anticipation. And today, God, as we take a look again at this original story, that you would help us to maybe see some things, that maybe we'd wipe away some of the details that are meaningless so that we could get to the core of what you want us to see and experience. And most of all, God, I ask that you just help us to experience you in some unique way, in some way that takes us to a new place. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. You know, another one of the traditions that we have oftentimes around this time of year is the tradition of gift giving. As you can see on stage here, we have some gifts. And in my home, this is a very exciting moment. I mean, I actually wrapped these gifts earlier in the week, had them sitting in our living room. My kids came home from school, and they're like, oh, you guys are already putting around the tree. You know, they're trying to figure them out. And I had to break the news that these were for Crosspoint on Sunday, totally empty, nothing in them. And you know, the deflation that they experienced was amazing because, you know, gift giving is a big deal. I mean, it's a big symbol, and we also see this as a part of the original Christmas story. I mean, there's this idea of bringing gifts, or the giving of gifts, and so, of course, there's a lot of variations when it comes to gift giving. In fact, I'll never forget the first Christmas I spent at my wife Julie's family's. I don't know if you've ever spent a Christmas away from your family of origin and somebody else's home, but, man, it was an eye-opener. It was very different than what I experienced growing up. I mean, in their home, they would sit around the living room. Now, her family's a little older than ours. Like, she's the youngest. I'm the oldest in my family of siblings. So, you know, her siblings were all older. We're sitting around and they're quiet. I mean, it's like quiet. Everybody's reserved. And one person would go up to the tree and begin to pull gifts out and place them at the feet of every individual. And I'm sitting there going, I don't know what to do with this. And so, you know, all of a sudden one person would begin to unwrap the gift and everybody would watch them. I mean, like 10 or 12 of us sitting around this room, all the eyes glued on that one person. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, I wish these gifts weren't sitting here, because what if I don't like what I'm going to get? I mean, I have this bad expression on my face. And not only did they watch, but then they, after they opened it, they would like express this heartfelt thank you to the person that gave it to them. It was like an eloquent speech. And I'm just like, what is this? And they called that like the Christian way to do it or something. I don't know. This is how you do it. So in my family, to contrast that, I mean, we would like descend on the tree, scratching and clawing, and you know, it was like a free for all, and we would open gifts at will, and paper'd be flying, and the beauty of it was very efficient. I mean, 4 or 5 minutes, we were done. I mean, it was. In fact, I always thought that if I'm going to write a book, and this is on my if I ever write a book list, special moments made more efficient. Here's how to do Christmas. Because it worked for us. That's the way we did that. And so, you know, we have a varying traditions when it comes to gift giving. And throughout this series, one of the things we've been looking at is how some of our perceptions of Christmas and what it's supposed to be, how they actually are in contrast or actually sometimes conflict with the original Christmas story. As we dive into the original Christmas story, we see that, you know, sometimes the way that at least we understand things were back then aren't exactly the way we want to make them today. And that's okay. We can live in that tension. And yet I would also venture to say it's probably in those moments of tension, in those places where maybe our perceptions and we actually get a glimpse of the story, it's in those moments that we actually get this flicker of hope. We get this hope that, you know, we see a different reality. We see that there's something way bigger going on right here than just all that it's become. And so we're going to look at this today. In fact, over the last few weeks, we've been looking at very inanimate things. We looked at the star, week number one of this series. We said, hey, you know, there's something about the star that was very unique. And it's an inanimate object, and yet God will do literally anything to get people's attention. And so he used this star that these astronomers, these educated, you know, men and women were studying, and this star began to move across the sky in some miraculous way. We don't know how it happened, but it began to move, and it drew the attention of this whole segment of people who otherwise would have never turned their attention toward God. And so God used that to draw people toward him. A couple weeks ago, week number two, we took a look at the field where the shepherds were out tending to their sheep, and how these angels arrived on the scene and just totally freaked the shepherds out. I mean, you know, whenever an angel arrives, I mean, this is not like a warm, fuzzy little event. These are warriors coming through right here. And so, you know, angels are fighting this kind of cosmic battle, and so they freak people out when they show up. The shepherds are freaked out. And all of a sudden they get this, they hear this news of this baby truth, this baby that's coming to be born, that's going to change everything. And they immediately have this sense of urgency. And we begin to realize that urgency is a part of the Christmas story. They hurried off to find this Christ child and begin to share the news of what this is going to mean for everyone. Last week we took a look at the inn and this place where Jesus was born into, and it's kind of a fascinating look because, you know, if you've been to a Christmas pageant, you remember an innkeeper, and, you know, Mary and Joseph interact with him. Well, nowhere in the scriptures do we ever read about an innkeeper. All we read is that there was an inn or some kind of dwelling. Could have even been a family, extended family member that opened their home up that allowed Mary and Joseph to have a place because there was no room for them. And so the point was, you know, somewhere in this inn, in this structure, in this home, someone inconvenienced themselves. Someone put aside some of their own preferences and said, hey, I'm going to create a little space over here in the corner for you, even out back, beyond the main living area of the home, so that this Christ child could be birthed into the lives, not only of the world, but in the lives of people, and make a difference. And so, you know, today we're going to take a look at the gifts of the Magi, and then we're going to take a look at maybe the meaning, you know, beyond just the gifts. You know, I think this is where this tradition of gift giving comes from that we see here in this original story. And yet I want us to ask a little deeper questions. You know, what's going on, you know, that's bigger than just the actual gift? What's going on in the hearts of the Magi? What is God telling us? Why does God put this story in the story of how he arrives in the world? What does he want us to understand about this event? And so we find this in Matthew chapter 2. And so if you have a Bible, turn with me to Matthew chapter 2. And this is where we pick up the story. It says, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, where is this one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him. And so, you know, we have to understand something about these men that are coming right here. These are privileged individuals. All right, there's a lot of misconceptions about the Magi. We think they're kings. They weren't kings. They were actually advisors to the kings. I mean, these are very intellectual beings. The Magi are very educated individuals, not just in the sciences and in math, but they're educated, you know, in astrology and philosophy. I mean, they even dabbled in things like the occult. And so they had a varied background that they brought to advise the kings. And this is what actually made them such good advisors to the kings who ruled over the kingdoms of this day. In fact, kings would even ask them to interpret their dreams. This was the role of the Magi. And so this word Magi is actually the root word of a lot of the words we have today. Things like magician. They were known to do magic. I mean, they dabbled in magic. And so it's where we get the word magician. It's also where we get the word magistrate, because they interacted with royalty. And so this whole idea of magistrate and kingship and so on. And so, you know, the thing we have to understand about the Magi is they were very similar to you and I this time of year. They were very busy. They didn't lack for things on their plate. I mean, these weren't just gentlemen sitting around waiting for someone to ask them a question. They were very busy. They were called upon. But the unique thing about their lives is they were interruptible. We see in the story they are interruptible. We see that, you know, even though they're busy, even though they have much on their plate, even though the kings are constantly beckoning them to come and interpret their dreams, to advise them, to guide them, they're truth seekers. And one of the unique things about truth seekers is that truth seekers have to make time to seek. Something you and I don't do very well. We rarely make time to actually seek. But the unique thing we see about these wise men, these magi, is they're willing to be interrupted. Whenever they see something that might be a nugget or something that might be of truth, they're willing to pursue it and take time out of what they normally do to pursue that thing. And so, you know, let's be honest, we don't like to be interrupted, do we? I mean, these guys were interrupted. They put everything aside, the busyness of their lives aside. Just this past week, I experienced an interruption. I mean, last weekend, in fact, during second service, my voice began to kind of go downhill. And by Monday morning, I didn't have a voice. Now, in typical style of Kurt, you know, I thought, well, I'll just keep going on with my week. I'll have all the meetings I'm supposed to have today, all the phone conversations. I went and helped coach my son's basketball team. And I'm yelling on the sidelines. Nothing's coming out. I just think if I push harder, they're going to hear me. But I mean, I'm just kind of going with my normal routine. I mean, it's a busy time of year, a lot of stuff to get done. And it came around to Tuesday afternoon, I'm thinking, man, I am not getting any better on this thing. I mean, I couldn't even really talk on the phone because nobody could hear me. It's like a whisper. I'm like, hey, I'm not getting all romantic with you. I just don't have a voice when I'm speaking to you. All right. And so, you know, so I finally call my doctor, and he's a good friend of mine, and going to see him. And he's like, Kurt, you know, there's not a lot I can do for you. You can throw some steroids at it. And but he said something that I really wasn't prepared to hear. He said, Kurt, you know, the main thing you're going to have to do, he said, I know where you're going. It's Tuesday, you're thinking I've only got 4 or 5 days left for my voice to get stronger for the weekend. And I said, absolutely. He said, well, here's what you need to do. You're going to need to clear your calendar for the next 3 or 4 days. I was not prepared for that. All right? I mean, it's a busy time of year. It's one of the busiest weeks of the year when it comes to church life. And yet, he's saying, Kurt, you need to interrupt the normal routine of what you do and clear your calendar if you want to be ready for the weekend. I wasn't prepared for that. I had not planned on that. In fact, as I had a lot of extra time this week to sit and think and not talk, I began to realize something. I thought, you know, this is what Christmas is really all about. Christmas is about an interruption. I mean, it happens every year. It's a massive interruption that happens every year. And you and I somehow are surprised by it. I mean, I don't think it's changed in like thousands of years. It's been December 25th for thousands of years. And yet it comes around and we're like, whoa, this massive thing happened. And we hustle, we bustle, we throw all this stress into our lives. And somehow we get behind. And yet it's the same day every year. And the question is, why do we have a holiday like this anyway? I mean, that's why I started asking, why do we have this? I mean, if we could all agree, couldn't we just do away with it? I mean, couldn't we just do away with it and not have to go through the hustle and bustle? But then I began to realize the Bible actually says something about why we have this event. And so, you know, if you feel like Christmas is a little interruption or maybe a big interruption, let me tell you what, it's because it is. It is. In fact, holidays were designed by God to be an interruption in your lives. All right, holidays are not man-made. All right, well, maybe Sweetest Day, we got suckered into that one by Hallmark, I think. But by and large, holidays are designed by God to be an interruption in your normal daily routine. And so God invented holidays for the Jewish people to interrupt their routine. He invented this to be a part of interrupting their daily routine so they could spend some time reflecting and being thankful and recalibrating with their Creator. And so holidays were created by God. And every holiday was intended to have two parts. It was intended to have a very public part. It was intended to have a private part. And so the public part were the festivals and the celebrations and the Christmas programs and the Christmas pageants and all the family gatherings. But equally important, there was to be this very private observance, this very private nature of a holiday where we spent time in private sacrifice. Or we spent time, you know, privately in quietness, just connecting with our Maker, you know, from the standpoint of acknowledging and thanking God for His role in our lives. So God had two intentions, a very private, a very public intention. And they were very equal. And I think this is one of the reasons that for many of us, you know, this season that we're in right now, we come into Christmas and it just feels like a toxic interruption for us. I mean, it feels very stressed because I think we've slid to one side of the equation and we exclusively just kind of gravitate toward the public and we never really connect with the private. I mean, I think this is one of the reasons we find ourselves in such a deep connection point where we just struggle with making meaning of this season. And so the wise men, they found time amidst the busyness to get interrupted. They were truth seekers, and they found time to seek. And they allowed this event to interrupt them. Because that's what God designed it to be, a holy interruption. A holy interruption. And I think we have to ask ourselves sometimes, we have to say, you know, in my quest for truth, I mean, you know, God designed us to want to know things, to want to understand things, to want to know if things are true or not. I mean, that's just a part of how we're wired. And yet, we have to ask ourselves, am I willing to be interrupted? I mean, am I really willing to be interrupted? Because truth does not come in a prearranged, scheduled way. It often just kind of immediately kind of happens. And we have to ask ourselves, am I going to engage with this thing? Or am I just going to kind of cruise on through the season? You know, in a week and a half or so, you know, we're going to be at the end of this year, and we're going to reflect back on 2011. We're going to say things, you know, we might ask ourselves things like, you know, where am I at in my life? Am I where I thought I would be, you know, at 38 years old? Kurt, are you where you thought you would be? You know, we're going to say, you know, what's the purpose of my life? You know, in my career, am I where I need to be in my career? Am I where I need to be with my family, in my marriage, in my relationships? And you know, we kind of do an evaluation point. And if we get to that point and we say, you know, I'm kind of at the same place I was at last year, then that's probably a good indicator that says, you know, you're doing a lot of private celebrating, but very little, I'm sorry, public celebrating, very little private reflecting and interruption. And so this morning, I want to kind of focus on that private side. And so in Matthew chapter 2, we pick up this story of these magi, these men who are very busy, and yet they take time to seek. And notice what it says right there. The first phrase, it says, on coming to the house, which tells us that, you know, this is a house now. Jesus is no longer in the stable when they come. He's in a house. This is probably when he was like a year, maybe 2 years, maybe even 3 years old, when the Magi actually arrived on the scene. He's no longer a baby sitting in a manger. He's moved out of the stable into a home. He's growing up. He's a little toddler. And it says, upon coming to the house, they saw this child with their mother Mary. They bowed down and worshipped him, and they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, of frankincense, and of myrrh. And so what we see right here, I want you to think about this again. These are magi. These are men in a position of influence, in a position of leadership. These are men who are willing to be interrupted. They're truth seekers, and they're willing to be interrupted. And what's their reaction when they get there? I mean, what's the reaction of these powerful, influential men? They come up to the stable, and they encounter this baby truth who's now a toddler, and they bow down on their knees, and they begin to worship him. And they bring him gifts. Now the gifts, I think this is where we actually get the gift-giving tradition of Christmas. This is where it all started. This idea of bringing gifts and honoring people and celebrating in this way. But I think too many times we focus on what the item is and not on the reaction or the intention of the heart behind the giver. And so these men, they literally bow themselves down. And it's interesting because, you know, the reaction is one that you and I have to ask ourselves, do we do this? Do we actually bow ourselves down? Do we actually get in a position where we give honor, or is it more just about handing out? You know, it's interesting because I think the generation we're in right now, in my opinion, is probably one of the most spiritually seeking generations that's ever existed throughout all humanity. I mean, we're open to more pathways in exploring God than has ever been accepted before. We're willing to not be held down by the traditions of what previous generations have maybe followed or said you have to follow God in this way. I mean, we're willing to dabble in things that might bring about meaning. We're always looking for that nugget of truth. We're always looking to stumble across that next piece of truth that takes us a step closer, a step further down the road in our journey. In fact, G.K. Chesterton, who's a great Christian writer, by the way, of the 20th century. In fact, he's probably the greatest Christian writer you never heard of. All right, I mean, this guy, I've mentioned him a few times before, quoted him before, but this is a guy who's not, you know, one of the mainstream writers, and yet, talk about a guy that had influence. This guy, you remember Gandhi and him trying to free his native people from Great Britain? He was inspired by G.K. Chesterton. Michael Collins, who helped bring about Irish independence in Ireland, he was inspired by G.K. Chesterton. People like C.S. Lewis, inspired by G.K. Chesterton. I mean, this guy had great influence over the 20th century. Here's what he said about this whole idea of stumbling across truth. He said, merely having an open mind is nothing. The object of opening the mind, as is opening the mouth, is to shut it again on something solid. And so what he's saying here is, hey, it's a good thing to have an open mind. In fact, when we're truth-seeking, we need to have an open mind. We need to explore all possibilities. We need to go down all pathways. And yet, just as importantly, when you come across something solid, we need to be willing to shut down and close down on that thing. You see, a closed mind is not a bad thing if you were open in your mind as you began your quest for truth. And when you find it, the only response is to begin to close down on it. You see, this is what the story of Christmas is about. It's a story of individuals throughout this story closing down on this truth that emerges among them. I mean, it's about them emptying themselves. I mean, think about Mary. Mary had plans for her life, and she's going to get married to this handsome guy named Joe. And all of a sudden, God shows up one day and says, hey, I've got a different plan. And Mary makes a decision. She says, hey, I'm going to empty my life of my hopes and my dreams. I'm going to adopt the plans of God. She emptied herself. Joseph, same scenario. The angel shows up and he's kind of upset with his wife-to-be. He says, hey, you're pregnant and it's not mine. I don't know where this thing came from, but I think I'm going to divorce you. God shows up, interrupts his thinking, and he empties his plans and he adopts God's plans. I mean, the shepherds in the field, they're out tending to the sheep. An angel comes, freaks them out. They drop everything they're doing. It says they hurried toward the manger. I mean, they hurried. They got a sense of urgency. There's something going on. They emptied their plans. They emptied their activities and went and oriented themselves around what God was doing. We see the same thing with the Magi. I mean, the Magi were seekers. They were open-minded. They were exploring. They're willing to dabble anywhere to come across truth, things that really took hold for them. And they were a good empty that was willing to be full if they found the right thing to fill it. A really key thing. They were a good empty. It's not bad to be empty as long as you're willing to be filled when you come across the right thing. And that's why when they came across baby truth lying in now a bed, not a manger, they're willing to bend their lives toward him. They're willing to bow their lives toward him because they've been seeking truth and they realize, man, this is something solid right here and we're going to close in on it. I want to contrast this picture right here with another picture we find just after this. Because, you know, this is a great picture. And we think, well, what does this have to do? Well, if you're like me, you probably connect more with this next picture. Because there's another influential leader. There's another leader we find in the story. And this guy's an influential leader. He's over a particular area. His name is Herod. And Herod said to these Magi, he said, hey, I'm a truth seeker. I'm somebody who wants to go and worship. In fact, he said to the Magi, hey, if you guys find this little baby that's supposed to be coming, this king of the Jewish nation, I want you to come back and tell me where he is because I want to go worship him too. And yet, as we read through the story, we realize that that's not where Herod's heart was. He had no intentions of going and worshiping him. In fact, here's what it says in verse 12. It says, and having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they, meaning the Magi, returned to their country by another route. And so apparently somewhere amidst this journey, these Magi got an impression by God or from God that Herod's heart wasn't where their heart was. His heart was not really wanting to worship the king. He had other plans in mind. And so they didn't go back and tell him. They returned to their country by another route. And then down in verse 16, it says, when Herod realized that they had been outwitted, he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem. Him and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under. And you're going, whoa, 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 why is this in my Christmas story right here? I mean, this isn't Christmas. The manslaughter of innocence, little boys and girls, boys, is not a part of the Christmas story, right? I mean, we don't like that. I think that's why we like to end the story at the nativity with everybody, you know, huddled around. All the wise men are right there. We never like to read past the story because as far as I've seen, I've never found a nativity scene with a whole bunch of little boy corpses all laying around it when you set it up, right? I mean, that's just not in the story. It doesn't fit with our warm, fuzzy little picture of what Christmas is supposed to be about. But you know what the problem is? The problem is that it's there. It's there. It's there like two verses after this nativity scene. After everybody's huddled around, it's there. I mean, something scandalous happened right after this baby truth emerged into the world. And the problem was with Herod. You see, the Magi were truth seekers. Herod said, hey, I'm a truth seeker too. The difference is the Magi were empty and they were willing to be filled if they came across something that was good. Herod wasn't willing to be filled. He was already full. I mean, he was full of himself. He was full of his own plans. He was full of his own dream. He was full of his throne. He was full of his beliefs. He was full of his own perceptions. I mean, everything about his life was being filled. He didn't want to be challenged by anything else. He was just looking for a story that fit his nice little life. Because he was already filled up. At least so he thought. In fact, his life could be defined as one of kind of throne preservation of just, he's basically one that said, hey, I don't want to get out of my chair. It's my chair. It's my throne right here. I'm going to stay in my chair. Even moving toward the Christ child, he said, hey, if you find him, tell me and then I'll go. He stayed in his chair. He clung to his chair. Now, this is interesting because I think this is kind of the same disease that you and I experience and deal with at different points in our life. You see, anytime you come into a point where you have influence, or you have leadership, or you have power over something, you know, you have some kind of accomplishment in your life, we have this tendency to begin to say, wow, look at what I created. Look at what I steered. Look at what I've done. Look at all that my hands have brought about. When we get to any place where we begin to feel like, man, I mean, I'm right and I'm on the throne. I mean, I'm the one creating. I'm the one moving this thing. Then we end up in the same position as Herod. It's the disease of not being willing to bow down. See, he didn't want to bow. That's why he didn't want to get out of his chair. People bow to him. He doesn't bow to people. Herod didn't want to bow. That wasn't a part of the Christmas story for him. Because of this. He knew if he bowed down, there was going to be a transition of power. And whenever there's a transition of power, there's pain. And so what does he do? He clings to his chair. I mean, we see this all throughout history, right? I mean, all throughout history, we see kings and kingdoms and leaders and presidents. And whenever there's a transition of power, there's always pain that follows. Sometimes it's pain that comes with pride getting stepped on. Sometimes it's pain that gets, you know, pain that comes when I lose control. Sometimes it's pain when things get ripped out of my hands. He knows whenever there's a transition of power, there's going to be pain and people get hurt. And Herod didn't want that to be a part of his Christmas story. And so he had a plan. He had a plan that's been passed down, tried and true from generation to generation. And his plan was, he said, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. What matters isn't so much whether or not this baby truth is really the truth. What matters is whether I like it or not. And so he's like, hey, I don't like it. So you know what you do when you don't like something? You just get rid of it. So I'll just kill all the baby boys under two and get rid of this little baby truth. And so Herod just tries to make it go away. Kind of like you and I, we try to make it go away. And so Herod's quest as a truth seeker becomes a quest not for truth, but what it becomes is a quest for truth that he likes. And rarely is truth found there. Because you see, Herod understood something about the Christmas story. He understood that Christmas story isn't about, you know, families spending more time together. You know, he understood that the Christmas story wasn't about, you know, more goodwill toward men. You know, he understood the Christmas story isn't about, you know, giving to those less fortunate than I am. I mean, as good as all of those things are, he understood that the story of Christmas is, am I willing to get out of the chair? And when I get out of the chair, oftentimes things get hurt. And see, here's the deal. You know, we're like, yeah, I get out of the chair, man. I want to embrace God. I mean, I want the morals. I like you know, going through my day feeling like a good moral person. I like laying my head on my pillow at night and feeling, man, I can rest well knowing I didn't screw anybody over today. I mean, you know, I'm good. I mean, I get out of the chair. I honor God. I've been my life to him. But forgive my ex who betrayed me 4 years ago. Whoa, if I do that, I got to get out of the chair. I got to let that go. We might say, you know, God, man, just the fact that I live in this country means I'm financially blessed. I mean, the mere fact that I'm an American means I'm wealthier than 95% of the people that live in this world. And God, I know that you want me to give to those who are less fortunate than I am, but you know, as long as there's nobody on my street or at least in my neighborhood who's starving this Christmas, I mean, as long as there's nobody at least I can see from my front porch, then all the money I have is also I can have a good life and a comfortable life and to protect myself, right? I mean, if we were to step out, it's like we'd be giving up the chair. Or we say things like, you know, my God doesn't say anything about, you know, my sexual life. I mean, God doesn't really have a whole lot to say about what I do sexually. I mean, as long as I'm not hurting people in the process, that's all God cares about, right? I mean, as long as I'm love, it's covered by love, it's good, right? And so you know what happens? We like cruise right by Christmas. We cruise right by Christmas. We miss the message because we're not willing to get out of the chair. And our lives, our entire lives become this quest of looking at the Christmas story and looking for some version of it that allow us to just stay in the chair, to stay on our throne the way we want it to be with all of our stuff, our ideas, our way, our plans. You see, I think G.K. Chesterton was right. This whole idea of an open mind. You know, it's one thing to have an open mind, but when we stumble across truth, when there becomes something solid, we have to ask ourselves a question. Am I going to close in? and close down on that thing. And you know, I think God put this quest for truth within every one of us. I mean, he put a quest to grow things, to steer things, to develop things. And yet, we have to remember who actually is the one that allows us to do that. And the problem when we stumble across truth sometimes is we don't know what to do with it. We see it, we experience, we celebrate it for a moment, and then we just throw it in the bag with all the other things. And sometimes we don't like it, so we just like, oh, I'm just going to throw that one away for a while. We have to say, you know, am I closing down on the truth, or am I just choosing my version of the story that I want it to be? You see, the Magi, they close in on baby truth, and they see it. They see he's solid. They see there's something unique. There's something about him that they've never experienced before, and they close in, and they bend their lives, and they bow down, and they worship him. And I think we have to ask ourselves a couple questions. These are questions I've been wrestling through this week. Am I willing to be interrupted? I mean, maybe we've done all the public, all the celebrating, the gatherings, the festivities, but am I willing to be interrupted this Christmas? Am I willing in these next 6 days for God to maybe interrupt me privately? And maybe help me take a step forward. I mean, you know, we have to ask ourselves, am I looking for my version of the story? Am I willing to see some nuggets, some flickers of hope, and to latch onto them and embrace them? And maybe I don't like them, but am I willing to live and say, what does it mean for my life to orient around this baby, this Jesus, this Christ, this Messiah, this Savior? Is there a chair? Is there a chair I need to move out of? Is there a chair of control, a chair of envy, a chair of pride, a chair of resentment, a chair of forgiveness that as I head into, you know, family gatherings over the next 5, 6, 8 days that I just need to let go of? I've been clinging on to a chair because it allows me to stay in control. And I know, man, if I bow myself, I may have to give up that chair. Am I willing to give up the chair? Am I a good empty? Am I a good empty? You see, it's not bad to be empty, but am I a good empty that's willing to embrace or receive or be filled when I find that thing that's right? You see, the significance of the Magi, we oftentimes look at the gifts, but I think it's more about their hearts. I think it's more about the gift of their lives, about them bending themselves and saying, hey, I'm empty, but I've stumbled across something that's right, that's good, that's true, that's core. I'm going to bend my life to it, and I'm going to get out of the chair. And so maybe this Christmas is about you letting go of one of those chairs. Maybe there's something you need to let go of. And, you know, maybe for you, maybe you've never experienced Christ in a way as someone who comes and you can let go of things that bring pain and brokenness and you can actually receive and be filled with things that are good. But, you know, that's what God does. It's called grace. It's called redemption. It's what started right here in a feeding trough called a manger. In these next moments, we're going to share in a meal and a practice and a tradition that, you know, people who have been following and bending their lives toward Christ for thousands of years have been doing. It's called the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper, the Mass, the Holy Communion. And you know, one of the unique things about Jesus is that Jesus never asks us to do something that he's not already done himself. And so as we think about this whole idea of leaving a chair, being willing to give up a chair of control, a chair in our lives that maybe we'd like to hold on to. You know, before Jesus came and emerged on the scene as a tiny little baby in a feed trough, you know, he left a chair in heaven. I mean, he was in a good place. I mean, he was with his heavenly Father, and he forsook all of that and lowered himself down as a tiny baby in the form of flesh and love. He left his chair so that those who are empty could be filled. And so as we think about what God, the requirement, what it means to seek truth, I mean, this is something Jesus modeled for us. And not only did he model it there, but he modeled it shortly before he even emptied himself out further. He was sitting with his friends. In fact, he was sitting at a table reclining with them, and he picked a simple piece of bread off the table, and he said to them, he said, hey, every time you eat this bread from this day forward, I want you to remember my body that was broken for you. He's saying, hey, I emptied myself. Not only did I leave the chair of heaven, I came down to show you what it means to live, but I'm going to allow my body to be broken for you so that you might receive me, so you might be able to take me in. That's why this is called the Mass in some circles. We literally take in the Mass, the fullness of Christ, the grace, and it fills our emptiness. Then he picked up the cup and he said, every time you drink this cup, I want you to remember my death and resurrection. He said, I'm establishing a new covenant. I want you to remember the blood, my body that was broken and shed, and my blood that was given so that you could be redeemed, so that you could experience redemption, the freedom of sin. And so with these two simple things, he again stepped out of a chair and he went even to another place so that you and I could be filled. And I'm just thinking that there may be some of us this morning that we're feeling pretty empty this morning, and maybe we need to say, what chair am I holding on to that's just creating that emptiness? What do I need to do to experience the fullness? And maybe you've never done that before. Maybe you've never received from God. You've never began relationship with God. Maybe today's your day. It's as simple as just saying, God, you know what, man, the way I'm doing it, my way, my plans, my beliefs, my perceptions, man, I'm just throwing it all in the bag, and it's leaving a lot of emptiness. Maybe this is the little nugget of truth right here that you need to just close in on. You say, God, I need to receive from you today. I'm going to give you all this stuff. I'm going to ask for you to forgive me of all the pain, all the brokenness I've created. I'm going to receive. I need to receive. I need you to fill me today. I'm going to experience your fullness. Maybe some of us who just aren't ready to do this. And if that's where you are, that's okay. You can stay in your seats as we do this morning. And I hope you'll just stay engaged. You'll continue to use this place as a place to continue to pursue as you pursue truth. I'm asking you to stand with me, and in just a few moments, if this is where you are, if you know Jesus as your Savior, if you want to take that step toward the manger and you want to begin to receive from Him, receive grace for the first time, you can just simply share that in your own quiet voice. And in a few moments, I'm going to come and ask you to share in the bread and the cup. And our tables are low today because I'm going to ask you to come, and we're going to take in the posture of the Magi. I'm going to ask you to come to the table and to kneel and to take whatever time you would like as you pick up a piece of bread and dip it in the cup. And share the bread and the cup, remembering the body that was broken and the blood that was shed so that you could be filled, because Jesus left the chair. And so I'm going to ask you to make this an act of worship. This is your gift this morning. I mean, it's not about the items. It's about, what's the condition? What's my reaction? Am I seeking, and am I ready to be filled? Because I think we need some private this Christmas. We're good at the public, but this is one of those private moments, so we're going to worship. Let's pray. God, I'm praying right now that as we, in these next moments, as we worship you, through simply bowing, through putting ourselves in a very defenseless position, I mean, bowing our heads, bowing ourselves down is one of the most defenseless positions we can take on. And yet, God, we're going to do this today as an expression of us saying, God, we want to continue to bend our lives. We're going to take a moment in private, and we're just going to bend ourselves toward you. And God, maybe there's some chairs we need to give up. Maybe there's some things we need to let go. Maybe we need to invite you to fill and restore and renew as only you can do. And so I pray, God, that in these moments that begins to happen. As we sing, I invite you to come, to kneel, to take whatever time you would like as you worship the King.